on terror. And, of course, you know, all of us have only been saying for years now that you can't make war on an abstract noun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it requires some pretty abstract weapons and, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he noted
war
that
on
calling.
A feeling.
Yeah, he said, yeah. War on a feeling. No, Boston song. parody. I smell a parody.
Don't do it to me.
can't take it anymore. Hey,
I have a backlog.
I even know how to play that one opening little riff with the D with the little finger on the third the first string on the third fret and the bit ding ding. But he said, Philip Sands said that calling it a war on terror, this is a quote, transforms criminals into warriors, and that you create a context in which they are able to recruit in their struggle.
Mm-hmm. So what do we call it? Does he have an answer?
Yeah, it's a crime.
It's a police matter. It's a law enforcement matter. It's not a military matter.
And what I can't fathom is why the damn right-wingers can't even understand somebody that they love, like General Petraeus, who said, and this is a quote, "Certainly extreme physical action can make someone talk. However, what the individual says may be of questionable value." Yeah, that.
Drugs.
For an ass-kissing suck-up, he even can speak the truth from time to time, but none of these assholes will listen to it.
Nope, not a one. Guys, we've done it to an hour again, and what a fun little hour it was.
I had fun. No doubt. I always like this part.
Yeah. It's the fun part of the day.
Yeah.
So off to bed with you, Peter Godbold.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Off to bed.
And
night, Peter.
Night, sweetie.
Night, Peter.
Night, sweetie.
Now, somebody has to say goodnight, John Boy.
Good night, dog boy.
It ain't gonna be me.
Okay. And you're around the corner. You're around the corner, John, and we're looking forward to it.
All righty.
All right. And in the meantime, here is the late great Lowell George, reminding you to.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Fox Stuff. What the hell is it? Oh, it's Thursday here. It's probably Wednesday night where you are, Thursday afternoon down here in Australia, you know, wherever it is that you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. And just another one of those horn sections, you know, start one place, we end up going way around the block and end up somewhere else. But that's the way that whole thing goes. Boy, got some stuff left over from yesterday. I had kind of a busy morning here. I was out of the house, office slash studio for a while this morning. So winging it a bit today. But the track of the day was a little bit of a no-brainer today. After having a good chat with David from Maine last night and talking about the changing landscape of the music industry and the web, and we talked about the fact that Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails has released yet another album of material for free for download. I don't believe, aside from doing a spot on this artist for Billy Shear's show a couple months ago, I don't think I've played anything from the Niggy Tardust album. And Bob's raved about this record. David from Maine is the one who turned us on to it. I still reckon this is one of the most exciting albums I have heard in about 10 years. And it's this really interesting, kind of breaking the mold kind of project. Now, it's a character, Niggy Tardust, who is performed and created by a gentleman by the name of Saul Williams, who back in the 90s was a dancer for some Pennsylvania, you know, Philly boy band, and he's a poet. And Trent met Saul when Saul opened up for him somewhere in Europe, and Trent was just completely taken with him and said, we have to do something, whether it's a song or an album. Well, they get together, and suddenly, you know, you have someone who I consider a musical genius, Mr. Trent Reznor, hook up with a guy who can write some amazing poetry. And so the album is pretty much Saul's lyrics then applied to Trent Reznor's music. And so it's got Trent's fingerprints all over it, you know. And for me, I kind of like this even better than Nine Inch Nails, and I think it's because of the lyrical content. It really, really grabs me. And, you know, the whole Niggy Tardust thing, you know, Niggy Tarball, you know, is he's picked this up as a moniker, as a way to try and break down the power of negative terminology in culture. And I really think that this is just one of the most creative records. And even though there's like not a guitar really in it, Bob and I have spoken about this, I almost have to classify this as punk, because there's something about the energy and the politics and the honesty that's behind the lyric that just screams punk to me. And I know that that seems kind of nonsensical. And I was speaking with a musician friend of mine here the other day, and I was playing some of it, and I made the comment, and she looked at me a little strange, and then she's kind of listening and then said, no, I can see what you mean. And so I don't feel quite so alien and off base to in thinking such things. So this is probably my favorite of the up-tempo tracks on this record. There's a couple of, I shouldn't say ballady, but, you know, slower, more mellow tracks that I think are absolutely outstanding. But this one, it's a song called WTF? In other words, what the fuck? And the vocal at the beginning, it's either Trent Reznor singing it or it's Saul Williams doing his best Trent Reznor impression. And I also like the sentiment of this lyric about, you know, so many people in this world end up doing something with their lives because they have to and make money, and they never actually reach their potential, and they live their life as an unfortunate lie. And I think that this is what this kind of sings to. I mean, you know, as lyrics go, they can kind of be morphed to apply to the listener, which is one of the beautiful things about music. But this is just a great rockin' track, and if this isn't a Nine Inch Nails hook, I don't know what is. This is so Nine Inch Nails hook, and it, like I said, it's just got Trent all over it. So you can go and download this album for $5, and I suggest doing it. It's a fantastic record. If you fear a bit of language, well, might not be your cup of tea. But it's very in your face. It's the lyrics are poetic. There's great melodies, and the production value is incredible. In considering that this is mostly electronic generated music in an era where things are way overmastered and whatnot, there is an amazing amount of warmth to the sound of this record. So. The name of the album is The Inevitable Rise and Liberation of Niggy Tardust. Mr. Saul Williams and What the Fuck. Roll it, Bob.
I'm fighting every war at once and I'm winning. You can't think of me as you did in the beginning. By the time you hear this song, you've gone wrong. Of time in your mind, unlearn, unwind, not to worry, there is no hurry.
What an amazing noise. I love all of those great kind of square wave keyboard noises. They're fantastic. And, you know, it's just, it really is one of the most amazing records that I've seen come out in a long time. And there I go, you know, I still use terms like albums and records because I still believe in the concept of a body of work. And, you know, that's just a taste of what happens on this record. The opening two tracks, Black History Month and Convict Colony, are intense lyrically, to say the least. So you can find a link to the Niggy Tardust website on today's show poster. Just go to niggytardust.com and you can $5. I mean, I think they even have a thing where you can download it for free, but as far as I'm concerned, anyone who puts their music out like that, if you can't drop $5, something's wrong. I think, you know, when you have record labels ripping us off for crap for, you know, $20 and $30 a pop, you know, when I think that, you know, I want to go and replace that Bob Dylan record from, you know, 1970 that has nothing but public domain songs on it where there's not even writing royalties to be paid, and I still pay $30 Australian for that album, I have no problem dropping $5 for something like what Trent and Mr. Saul Williams put together. Anyway, had some stuff that I didn't get to yesterday, so we'll get there now. ELO sent me this, and, you know, I was speaking yesterday about Monsanto, and probably, you know, number two or tied for number one in my most hated corporations has got to be Exxon. You know, still haven't paid for the Valdez thing and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, record profits where they don't even know where to put the money, where they actually are struggling to find places to put the money, and they can't pay for the damage that they do. I'm sorry, that makes you evil, absolutely evil. Well, ELO sent me from KTLA news website, Exxon offers to buy homes built on toxic soil. Now, you kind of read that headline, you go, oh, maybe they're doing the right thing. Well, as usual, it's kind of, sort of, but probably not. ExxonMobil is offering financial assistance to 19 homeowners after toxic chemicals were found in the soil of a neighborhood near its Torrance gasoline refinery. The oil giant, which posted record first quarter earnings this last week of almost $11 billion, that's profit, $11 billion for one quarter, is offering to buy 10 homes in an area where elevated soil vapor levels were found. The company is also offering 9 other nearby homeowners a so-called price protection program, which refinery spokeswoman Carolyn Keith describes as a security blanket. The whole purpose is if the house sells below market price, then the company comes in and helps with the difference between market price and what they're able to sell at. It has a lifespan of 5 years. So, okay, explain to me this. You're living in a home that, they have levels here. They say, investigations of the vapor levels in the neighborhood have so far yielded results of up to 160,000 parts per billion of benzene and up to 500,000 parts per million of methane, according to an engineer at the State Department of Toxic Substances Control. Those are well above the so-called screening level of 10 parts per billion for benzene. That's 10 parts per billion, and these properties have 160,000 parts per billion. Okay, so we're not talking about, like, marginally over. We're talking, like, way clear, not even touching the line. It is out of the park levels. And they're going, okay, you might not want to live there anymore, but if you can sell your house, and you tell me that a real estate agent won't factor in the fact that it's a toxic site into the market price, So these people have had their health ruined, their financial lives destroyed by this chemical content. And they're not just going to, like, outright buy them a new home, pay for their medical bills. No, no. We're gonna play with that religion of the markets. The markets will decide. Bow at the altar of the market. Really getting sick. That's another one of those terms that I'm getting really sick of, like family values and working families. You know, trust the market. Yeah, right. Now, the methane thing, the legal limit is 5,000 parts per million. These folks have 500,000 parts per million. You know, I mean, we're not talking that this is small time. And Exxon feels that this is good. This is being fair. This is being a good corporate citizen. If they were a good corporate citizen, they first of all probably would have announced the fact that the area was toxic, you know, before the government had to get involved, because, you know, we let them self-regulate themselves now, don't we? And, you know, these people should have had the properties bought out for three times the value and had funds set up to deal with the cancer that many of these people will most likely face. I mean, ELO in the chat room is reminding us that, you know, Nanette's husband worked with benzene and he now has cancer. I mean, this actually affects people. But when we distort law and create things like corporate personhood, it allows things like this to be justified. Because we can't do undue damage on the person that is the corporation. You know, we can't do that now because, you know, the business of America is business. Well, war, but business in war. And it really doesn't matter how many lives get wrecked. You know, and this is the same outfit that was found guilty of negligence with the Exxon Valdez debacle. And who, while paying some money into cleanup, spent 100 times that much money in advertising about the cleanup that they weren't doing successfully, but spun it that they were. And as we know, the Supreme Court is now looking at it. You know, the stacked Republican Supreme Court is now looking at saying, oh, Exxon shouldn't have to pay all that money. That's unfair. Now, you know, we may have destroyed the livelihoods of indigenous tribes up in Alaska and northern Canada who used a sustenance farm. But that doesn't matter, you see, because our corporate profits screwing you every time you go to a gas pump is more important than the well-being and security of actual human beings. Actual people. The article ends saying, the contaminated soil was discovered in the neighborhood late last year after a resident noticed a gasoline-like odor in her driveway. That home was briefly red-tagged as unfit for human habitation before subsequently testing showed the house was safe. Toxins found in the neighborhood, in addition to the potentially carcinogenic substances of benzene and methane, industrial toluene, ethyl benzene, xylene, and byproducts of gasoline production, according to officials. So, you know, I mean, there are ways to reclaim this soil, and this should be Exxon's responsibility. But they'll find a way of making it the local government's responsibility, I almost guarantee you. Either that, or they'll do like they did here in Sydney for the 2000 Olympics, is take a toxic waste site from Union Carbide, where most of the Agent Orange during Vietnam was produced, and the Bayer Paint Company, who used to just dump their shit straight into the Parramatta River. Do they clean it up before inviting the world to enjoy the games? No! We pave over it and invite families to come and play on it. Now, there's just across the way from where I live, there's been a massive soil reclamation project going on another part of the same complex to build apartments. So, I reckon 10 years from now, what used to be a gated-off area, you know, saying this is the former Union Carbide site, is now slowly having huge apartment complexes just built on top of it. Now, they are doing the proper reclamation work here. We've gone to some of the local meetings, and even though the head, the guy who led the community group from the company's end didn't like me very much, because I obviously was going to ask way too many questions, I did get the impression that they actually were cleaning the soil. They designed equipment. This is Weiss who does it. It's a German outfit, I believe. They're one of the few companies in the world that can do stuff on this kind of scale. But there, they're actually going to clean it up to some extent before they pave and build over it and make it a distant memory. But the most toxic place is our international sporting, you know, thing out in the middle of Western Sydney. I remember back in the gigging days, and I think I was setting up for, oh, it might have been a rugby league game or something. Might have been even setting up for a halftime show for a rugby grand final or some such deal. And, you know, the crew kids are kind of up on what's going on. And there was a whole bunch of German tourists getting the tour of Olympic Stadium. You know, still only a couple years after we hosted the Olympics, so, you know, Sydney was still that, you know, greatest Olympics ever city. And myself and a couple of crew people, I think Gail was even with me at the time, you know, came, we were near the sideline, and these tourists were, you know, being run around by their little Australian tour guide. And one of the tourists asked what we were doing. And I said, oh, we're setting up for whatever it was. And one of them made a joke. Are you going to go and play some footy on the field after you're done? And I said, no, I'd rather get off the toxic waste site as soon as possible. I like to spend as little time as I can here. And all these German tourists, their eyes bug out, and they go, excuse me? I said, oh, this is the former, you know, Union Carbide site, Agent Orange. And immediately the tour guide is grabbing them by the hand going, that's all we have to see here. Come on, we have a schedule to keep. And you can tell all these people are going, mental note, search net for, Google for. And no one talks about it. No one talks about it at all. And it's just, it's madness. It's absolute madness. The fact that, you know, and so in California here, well, you know, they're doing a half-assed attempt at compensating people. And I love that. Market value. Market value. We'll make the difference in market value. Oh, okay, so you keep having to devalue the house because it's built on a toxic site that no one's going to want to buy. If you actually let them know, which I'd hopefully there would be some sort of disclosure laws involved there, Well, they end up just paving over it. Will your local Wally World end up on top of it? And then suddenly that intersection of the local streets where this was all happening suddenly doesn't exist anymore. And through the passage of time, rewrite people's histories in their mind. You know, they've all gotten so big, and they all have so much control and no fear of competition. And they've bought politicians from all stripes in all countries because we've been so short-sighted, our entire economies rely on that black gold nasty shit that we continue to pull out of the ground from faster and faster depleting finite resources. And these companies have us by the short and curlies and say, you're not gonna come down on us because you know, I see a headline, you know, Exxon gonna buy these properties. Yeah, they're not really gonna buy the properties. They're gonna do as little as possible. You know, thank you very much. Well, it's the least we could do, and as you know, we will always do the least that we can do. Now, another thing that I didn't get to yesterday, and this is one of those that comes from the "this can't be real" file. But, you know, you just can't second guess what might actually be possible. Gene sent this to me the other day from our good friends at ecogeek.org, another one of the best environmental websites, blogs out there. You know, this is one of those when I see the headline, you know, I kind of go, huh? "The race to create the first solar airplane is on." A solar airplane? What are you, nuts? But, you know, in the face of possible collapse of a system that we can't sustain, people start really looking for alternatives. And they say here, "The last barrier to greener transportation is up in the air, and if these newly designed planes can get up there, the future of air travel may look decidedly different. While cars have been going green for decades, airplanes have remained a behemoth, gulping modes of transportation. EcoGeek put together a list of ways which air travel is getting greener, but there's a long way to go. That's bad news for anyone who has to travel for business reasons or can't resist that getaway to exotic locales. But while we're nowhere close to being ready for commercial use, there is some green in the distant horizon. A French and Swiss company are both vying to compete to complete the first viable solar-powered plane. The Solar Impulse project, which they've discussed previously, is backed by Swiss adventurer Bertrand Piccard, is aiming to use only solar energy to keep its aircraft up both day and night. The Solar Impulse plane, which hopes to be about 1,500 kilograms of takeoff weight, is constructed around a skeleton of carbon fiber honeycomb composite. French company Lisa Airplanes is putting its efforts into the Hybird project, which plans to fly around the world with a 100% clean electric airplane powered only by solar energy and hydrogen. For takeoff, the Hybird will use solar photovoltaic cells affixed to the wings and on the horizontal tail, and for onboard power supply. A fuel cell will then fuel the aircraft to cruise flight, and an electric engine will propel the plane. You know, 10 years ago, this would have been complete pipe dream kind of stuff. But it really isn't. It's becoming more and more viable as innovation is having to compete with reality. We're not going to be able to do what we're doing the way that we're doing it for that much longer. I don't have it up in front of me, but you've heard over the last 24 hours or so, the same folks that correctly, you know, forecast that we were going to see $100 per barrel oil prices, you know, and they got laughed out of the media when they first said it, who are absolutely right, reckon we're going to hit $200 per barrel by the end of 2008. Okay, you think it's bad at the pump now, just wait until we hit $200 a barrel. We started hitting prices like that. It's going to begin to impact the airline industry for sure. I mean, we've already had airlines here in Australia have to apply for fare increases of like $20 per flight or something like that, purely because of the rise in the cost of jet fuel. So one thing that's going to keep driving the technology is the fact that we have gotten so spoiled in being able to go anywhere at any time, have anything we want from anywhere at any time. We're not going to get the bulk of the world to change those habits. However, they could be thrust; those changes could be thrust upon us at a stage. So now there's money going into technology where people are looking at other ways of doing what we do now by not utilizing these finite resources. This is still my best argument against nuclear power stations. It's just signing up for another finite resource. Why? I mean, we've learned this. You know, we have learned that if you pull something out of the ground faster than it can be replaced, you're going to run out at some point. Lilo's right. We have an on-demand economy. And it's really sad. You know, I mean, as far as information in the web, all that on-demand, that's fine. That's cool. But the idea of, you know, on-demand blueberries in the winter. Things like that are going to become impossible. And this is just simple. I mean, it really is the simplest of economics. And as the price of oil continues to rise, it's going to end up making the U.S. dollar worth less and less and less and less and less. Because thanks to good old Richard Nixon having gotten rid of the gold standard and tying the value of the U.S. dollar to oil trade, as long as we continue to have that connection, as petrol prices, oil prices continue to skyrocket, the value of the dollar, on top of other factors, is going to continue to fall. I was watching an economist last night, and one that I kind of don't mind so much. He doesn't seem to be quite as... He seems to be pretty forthright with his opinions, as opposed to pushing his own bank's, you know, selling points. He made a call that for the first time since the Australian dollar was floated 18 years ago, the Australian dollar will be on parity with the U.S. dollar by the end of the year. That is so outside of what anyone would have ever thought. And I have to remind you that a decade ago when I moved to this country, it was 45 U.S. cents to the Australian dollar. So, you know, the big behemoth that is the American economy and that all-powerful U.S. dollar is already a thing of the past. It's one of the reasons that I'm thankful that we have a prime minister that speaks Mandarin fluently. He can speak directly with our closest, largest trading partner. No matter what problems I have with China, just by where we're located and the resources we have, there's going to be a relationship there. And it's less U.S.-centric, which I think is a good thing overall. It's going to hurt like hell in the United States. And I know it's already hurting like hell. You know, it's again one of these things where I am so thankful that from my own environmental, I guess, arrogance, made the conscious decision that I would set up my life so I didn't have to have a car. And I feel so bad for all of you that have to pump this shit into your vehicle to get to your job or get your kids around, that ends up feeding the very system that's destroying you. And Lottie says in the chat room, he says, based on that price of a barrel of oil, oil hasn't really gone up much. I think you're saying that as far as Australia is concerned. And that is very true. The petrol prices are only just really starting to increase now because we did have an insulation effect over the last few years that as the price of oil was raising, the value of the U.S. dollar was dropping against the Australian dollar, so our newfound buying power was compensating for it. Now, that can't last forever, and we also buy Tapis crude as well, which is the Asian standard. And I'm not even sure what currency that's all traded in. So, yeah, we were insulated, but that insulation is kind of, you know, stopped now. We're not seeing it rise as fast as you are in the United States, but then again, we were paying twice what you were paying, twice or better, before all this shifting started. And we still pay far more for petrol in this country than the U.S. does. In fact, pretty much every country in the world pays more for petrol than the United States does. So sometimes when I hear the whining and the bitching and the moaning, part of me, even though I understand the reality of how this affects individuals, the reality for me is now you're feeling a bit what everybody else felt. And if for the past 30 or 40 years the United States was actually paying similar prices for petrol that the UK was paying, that Germany was paying, that France was paying, that Australia was paying, you all might not have been so damn wasteful. And maybe there would have been legislation in place to actually push CAFE standards for cars up. But no, we've had this subsidized oil-driven economy based on the United States petrol dollar. And so your petrol and your gasoline has been subsidized. And the subsidy is no longer really having the effect that it used to. And again, it's another one of those, you know, you're kind of getting a little bit of what you deserve, and I know that's really, really mean, but I'm sorry, it's the truth. You know, I remember when my sister was stationed in Germany back in the 80s, she talked about, you know, effectively $3 for a gallon of gas then. Now, you know, and we were paying what? 60, 70 cents maybe? I can't even remember. And Lottie, he said, you know, most countries tax petrol heavily to provide health care. And that is true, health care and road works and things like that. And I think that's fair enough. I think it's 20 cents a liter here in Australia, if I'm not mistaken. So if you're paying $1.50 a liter, 20 cents of it is tax. And again, you know, I've talked about the fact that I really think we need to have not so much a carbon cap and trade system, but a carbon cap and tax system, where if you're polluting, you pay to pollute. And then that money is used to develop either greener technologies or to pay to clean up the mess you made. So having a slightly heavy tax on fuel doesn't really bother me much, as long as the money is being used for things like healthcare and undoing the damage done by using the very thing that you're buying. You know, there's consequence to all this. You know, I just sometimes just sit there blown away that, you know, we've wasted 30 years. If we had just paid attention in the 70s, if we'd actually paid attention to that silly Georgian peanut farmer Jimmy Carter, if we actually listened to him instead of laughing him out of office, we could be in a very different situation. We could have actually developed by now and had in place by now the infrastructure for these new technologies. And we wouldn't be feeling the need to have oil barons like George W. Bush and Dick Cheney in office to try and guarantee the security of our very economies. I mean, that is the cold hard truth of it. But yet, by sending those guys in to deal with the problem, they've set it up so that they profit off of it, not that we see any of the benefit. You know, forgetting the death, the destruction, the lies, the torture. It's kind of hard to forget about that stuff, isn't it? Boy, does the for-profit media work very hard to make us forget. Lilo, my goodness, you environmentalists are already at fault for our poor corporations are hurting. Ah, you gotta love sarcasm. Oh, what else did I have lined up here? Not that I've had a chance to actually check through any of this stuff. What do I have here? The Independent does some pretty bloody good stuff. And I've only had a scan through this, but, you know, I've spoken before, you know, we talk about extinction of species, you know, larger species, you know, polar bears, you know, things like that. But where we really need to have equal, if not more, concern is the stuff at the other end of the chain that's dying off. You know, I've spoken, you know, numerous times about the dead zones in the oceans where, you know, especially off the coast of California, where all the ectoplasm and the protoplasm has all disappeared. And so when the food chain dies off at the beginning, it has a much more disastrous effect than losing stuff higher up in the food chain. Not that that doesn't have its impact, and sometimes those are huge as well, because taking out, say, a large predator ends up allowing former prey to run rampant and things fall out of balance. But there's a piece at the Independent here, and I believe Gene sent this to me, saying, insects will be climate change's first victims. Tropical insects rather than polar bears could be among the first species to become extinct as a result of global warming, a study has found. Insects in the tropics are already living at the limit of their temperature range, and any further increases could quickly kill them off with huge repercussions for tropical habitats, which rely on insects for everything from pollination to waste disposal. Scientists have found that a rise in average temperature in the tropics of just 1 degree or 2 degrees centigrade could be enough to exert a significant and harmful effect on the survival of a wide variety of important insects. And, you know, the pollination thing reminds me of, you know, over the last year or so, we've seen this colony collapse you know, event that has been happening with bees all over the world. And, you know, we lose the bees. Folks, we are so screwed. We are so screwed. Because it's bees that do most of the pollinating work in most of the world. It's this great system nature has set up, you know. It's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. But we start pulling out the cogs of the motor, the thing starts to not function. It begins to function erratically. Systems run into overload. Others collapse. So, you know, when you have some right-winger say, you're more worried about a damn bug than you are about whether the guy who digs the coal down the road still has a job. You say, hey, but you know what? Without that bug, the plants won't get pollinated, so you won't have any food to feed the guy who's going to go and dig the coal. So take that logic and shove it where the sun don't shine, you little, stupid, frickin' moron. We depend on the lower ends more than they depend on us. You know, is that going to, you know, do you think that we can get this through to a few of these idiots? You know, thankfully here in Australia, the concept of climate change has really gotten traction. I'm so happy about it, and I hope that it's going to set the wheels in motion for real, honest work towards cleaning up this carbon-based economy into something that will be sustainable for one. I mean, we're talking about the survival of the human civilization here. Because, you know, the Earth will go on. The Earth will go on without us. You know, we talk about saving the planet, but it's really about saving ourselves. We can no longer do what we've been doing. We've been shitting in our own nest for so long and just thinking that, you know, it's never going to pile up so high that I can't function. Well, guess what? It's piled up so high that the knee boots weren't enough anymore. You need the full-on body slicks to wade through it. Just seeing in the chat room, rant on, rant off. And if you've never been by our chat room, you are so missing, well, you know, one of the best interactive aspects of this network. It is just the coolest thing. And ELO has just added a whole bunch more emoticons that just you know, just add to the experience. And I got a couple minutes left here, so I'm gonna talk about something completely frivolous because I've been kind of ranting and bitching and moaning enough. For those that are in the chat room, we have one of our new friends in there is a guy by the name who goes by the name of Juggalnaut. Now that's my next door neighbor, and he did my head in last night. I love watching talented people. I just think it's the coolest thing. And I went over to his place for a bit. We had a cup of tea and we're sitting there having a chat. And I was coming back to do dinner. And he says, "Hey man, you want to see my newest trick?" Now he's a Juggalnaut. You get it. He's a juggler, right? And it's one of these things, you know. Theater for radio. And I'm going to see if I can get him to allow me to videotape this and post it, because I just thought this was the coolest thing. In the dark, he does a bit of conjuring and illusion stuff with this. Best I can describe it is like a super bright LED-powered egg. And in front of me, you know, he kind of strokes it and it changes colors and he's tossing it back and forth. And then he throws it at me. And I seriously watch this little light trail head towards me and vanish. And then in old magician-type humor, goes and pulls the glowing egg out of my ear. And I just sat there cracking up in his backyard, just like going, now how do I explain this to Gail? Because I'm just laughing my ass off because, you know, no preparation, no setup, no nothing. Right in the middle of the backyard, does this thing. And it was amazing. I want to see more of what this guy does. And you know, I like entertainment of any type. And I especially like seeing stuff outside of what I focus on. And so, and it was perfect timing after that whole story about that poor substitute teacher who made the toothpick disappear and suddenly he was a witch, got to burn him, burn him, burn him. My neighbor pulls out this conjuring illuminated egg thing. And I love talent. And I love people that express their talent. And for 5 minutes there, you know, he took a moment out and, you know, just said, you want to see my new trick? And sent me off with a smile on my face for the next good while as I'm just sitting there remembering this light trace heading towards me and vanishing. And, you know, the pulling it out of my ear bit, you know, that's kind of old school, that kind of bit I do kind of understand a little bit. But how he made the thing disappear in midair heading towards my head, I have no idea. It was just too cool. And unfortunately, being radio, it's something that I can't exactly bring him on air to show you. So you'll just have to believe me. Unless I can get video evidence. But anyway, what do we have set up for tomorrow? Tomorrow is Billy Shear's Music Day. And who do we have lined up for tomorrow? Oh, I have it here somewhere. What did he send me? I don't know if Bob remembers. I don't have it off the top of my head. But we do have another Billy Shear's Music segment tomorrow. It's someone really good, too. But you'll just have to tune in tomorrow to find out. And, you know, we'll wrap up some of the week's event stuff. I still have a couple of other environmental things to speak at you alls about. And, yeah, Juggernaut, be glad. Oh, yeah, it's Steve Winwood tomorrow. Right, that should be really good. That should be really excellent. And I actually haven't had a chance to preview the segment. I'm hoping he's going to do some of the traffic stuff because I dug traffic. But, yeah, thankfully, Juggernaut, you live in Australia where the fundamentalists don't necessarily rule the roost and you won't be chased down for being a heretic. So, anyway, folks, thanks for being with us today. Tune in tomorrow. We got Billy Shear's Music. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing as per usual. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. You too can be part of the fight against mountaintop removal mining. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the archives and the streaming. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why.